Hey, pull up a chair. We're so glad to have you join us here on the Back Porch Education Podcast. For the next half hour or so, we're going to talk about all things educational. It's a wonderful day to learn something. Glad you could join us.
Okay, so Steve, do you remember talking about Kierkegaard? Do you remember what your central sort of... I remember you weren't a huge fan of him. What was kind of the... Can you recall what you don't like? I think I know.
Well, a lot of it to me was that he seemed to stop short of where I would have gone with his points. I couldn't figure out where he was going because he either went too far or stopped up short. I couldn't anticipate his logic.
So, and you know, we've read a few books together. I know what I know about you. I think this is going to be kind of where maybe you don't feel like you can go with Kierkegaard. Kierkegaard is painted by some to be... The word is fideist. That is, he would champion faith over reason.
Yes, right. So I don't know what the term would be, but I would say that there's a partnership there, and he seemed to have no problem in driving his car of faith right over the cow of reason.
Yeah, right. I agree. Now, he loves Socrates. He loves reason, I think. You know, he's thankful for what it can do. But he's not – what's the image that you like so much from old – it's John Paul II, isn't it?
Oh, with the two wings and the – you know what, though? Come to think of it, we're supposed to be doing – hello, listeners. Welcome to the podcast. Jason and I – having a good conversation about Kierkegaard and kind of forgot that we had a podcast going on here. And it's a good thing that you interrupted our conversation because today's theme is that of conversation. And to give us something to talk about, as always, Jason's got ourselves a poem. Jason?
Yeah, Steve, this one is written by, you may not have heard of this guy before.
Well?
His name is Robert Frost.
Oh, for crying out loud. All right.
Well, I just can't get away from this stuff. No, this one. Now, I heard, I don't even know if this is true, but I heard somewhere that this poem was written by Frost, who was not a big fan of FDR. And he was writing this sort of in response to FDR's fireside chats or something. So I don't even know if that's right, but... it's fun nonetheless. This poem is entitled To a Thinker. The last step taken found your heft decidedly upon the left. One more would throw you on the right. Another still. You see your plight. You call this thinking, but it's walking. Not even that. It's only rocking or weaving like a stabled horse. From force to matter and back to force, from form to content and back to form, from norm to crazy and back to norm, from bound to free and back to bound, from sound to sense and back to sound. So back and forth, it almost scares a man the way things come in pairs. Just now, you're off democracy, with a polite regret to be, and leaning on dictatorship. But if you will accept the tip, in less than no time, tongue and pen, you'll be a Democrat again. A reasoner, and good as such. Don't let it bother you too much if it makes you look helpless, please, and a temptation to the tease. Suppose you've no direction in you. I don't see, but you must continue to use the gift you do possess, and sway with reason, more or less. I own... I never really warmed to the reformer or reformed, and yet conversion has its place not halfway down the scale of grace. So if you find you must repent from side to side in argument, at least don't use your mind too hard. But trust my instinct, I'm a bard.
Well, so
that's good stuff.
That's good. That's great. I hadn't heard that poem before, so appreciate you pulling me further into the Frost canon. And a great way to start a conversation about conversation, because it's almost inevitable, to me anyway, a great conversation comes out of some rich shared experience.
Definitely.
I've had the best conversations of my life have been, you know, begun by some shared artistic experience, some shared text, a movie we've both seen, sometimes a tragedy. I had a great conversation here not long ago about technology, starting with the fact that both me and the other person's cars were consuming way too much of our money these days. And it's a conversation, to me, is a very important thing in education. I'm glad we're going to spend some time on it. And of course, in wanting to get this thing rolling, I would put out there that when you have two people talking about some common thing, I know we've put forth the definition of education as the cultivation of wisdom and virtue, but I think one of the main ways it gets cultivated is by two people sitting, talking, as it were, at least with their mind's eye, looking at the same thing from their different perspectives, which is what Frost is intimating, you know, can sometimes drive you crazy, but each person has their unique take on whatever artifact is being looked at. And when two people choose to honestly listen and speak to each other about that shared thing, both can grow thereby.
Definitely. Well, I think that's what we see that in the classroom a lot. At least I'm thinking of it, sort of those conversations where, well, I guess I would say in a conversation, it's nice because not one person has to know everything, right? We're working on stuff together and we can kind of fill in each other's gaps,
right?
Which I guess you could also mislead each other too.
Right. But it assumes, what you're saying is, it assumes that no one person can know it all.
Right.
So even if one is more knowledgeable than the other, and conversation gets difficult the further apart in level of knowledge the two people are, right? It's tough to carry on an honest conversation with a five-year-old.
Yeah.
The conversation is much different than a 25 and a 35-year-old sitting because of maturity. But I don't just mean it a chronological issue. I think an expert in mechanics trying to have a conversation with somebody who's never even seen a car, they don't have enough in common to converse. So that commonality is important. But I always push my students, because I don't think we live in a society that necessarily promotes conversation. I think it promotes argumentation of a sort. But most of what it's trying to do is just constantly persuade each other that the one speaking is right.
Yeah. And I think that's an important distinction to draw out. Certainly in a conversation, persuasion happens, argumentation happens, but I would want to point to both both argumentation and persuasion as different sorts of things than conversation is. There's a different end.
Right. And education, I love Aristotle's quote, right? It is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it. There is this necessity of sifting through available data, especially that which I'm receiving from someone else's mind, and constantly asking myself, well, how much of this is true? You know, what's he saying? What does he mean by it? And then that third question that we ask, how much of this is true? There's nothing like conversation to
right.
to present and represent to us truth in a way that we wouldn't think it up that way ourselves. Someone has presented it to us with a different set of clothes on, so to speak. And we're I know the idea, but I've just never seen it this way before.
Dude, that what you just said right there, that made me, which the listeners might get mad at us here, but that made me think of the one in the many episode, because I get that idea, but kind of the way that we were talking about it in that episode, there were things going on that I was like, I haven't thought of it in this way in particular before. So sort of recontextualizing knowledge maybe, or I don't know, letting it bear fruit might be a better metaphor.
Yeah. And at the heart of that, and I used the word sifting earlier on purpose, because I find all too often when I try and engage in real conversation today, many people want to share their opinion. And I want to make a strong distinction here in the differences between sharing opinions and sifting opinions.
Okay.
When I feel I have a well, founded, well-built opinion, and I'm excited about it, I want to share it. I want to use the Christian notion, I want to evangelize. I want to go out and win other people to my glorious light that I have come by. And that doesn't make for near as good a conversation as the still hesitant, I'm not exactly sure what I believe yet, but I've got some people that I think are honest and different than me.
Hmm.
And I want to put as much out there on the table. I'm going to put some stuff out there that I know is probably not right.
But I don't know what of it may be.
Right. And I want, in a conversation, I want the gratuity of some of what I put out there, you're going to poke holes in, you're going to help me see how it's not the right stuff. But in doing that, I'm going to get some stuff from you that I didn't have before. And I think you'll find that when we've got it all of our cards out there on the table, you're going to like some of my cards too. And so we all come away with a better formed opinion from the sifting rather than the here's my card, you'd better take it, call me anytime, I know what I'm talking about kind of. I see that in the context that we think is conversation today, the talking head, news stations, talk show, radio, so on, where I just don't see that much sifting. I mostly see, you better listen to me because I'm right.
Right. Proselytizing.
Yes. Yes. Evangelism. Okay. Yeah. And cool. I hesitate saying propaganda or brainwashing, but those would probably be legitimate.
Yeah, definitely. It happens.
While this show is a back porch discussion, it does cost a little bit of money. So if you're liking what you hear, consider helping us out. You can simply use the donation button on the website to send along a one-time gift, or we have subscriber plans for those who want to commit to regular support. Subscribers can get premium rewards depending on how nice a chair you pull up on the porch. We have everywhere from sitting on the floor to our finest rocking chair available. But whatever you can do, know that it helps us keep the conversation going. And for that, we heartily thank you.
Okay, so Steve, what do you think, based on what you were just talking about, a question that popped into my head. Okay, sharing and sifting. When we're sharing, or when one is sharing or propagandizing or proselytizing or whatever, they're making a claim implicitly or explicitly that they have authority. And so then that got me thinking, where does authority lie in the conversation?
So maybe I could put it this way. A good conversation's focal point is outside the realm of settled knowledge of the two conversants and is wrapped up in what they're conversing about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So often, like I said, it's a shared thing. So let's just, for ease, for the moment, let's just say it's a text. Let's say it's Robert Frost's poem that you just read.
Yeah.
if we're conversing about it, the final arbiter of the conversation, who's right, is the text.
Okay.
If I'm talking about something in a evangelistic way, I'm saying I've pretty much decided what that text says, and now I'm telling you what it says.
I'm telling you, right. So it sounds like, I guess what I'm after here, and I'm thinking, I'm kind of getting there slowly, but it seems to me like with preaching or some derivative thereof, the authority is from the speaker, or maybe more charitably, they might also say like, well, no, I'm from the text. Okay. Yeah, sure. Sometimes, but in a conversation, it's a different sort of thing than like argumentation or persuasion, like we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And really we're kind of both submitting to the process of conversation. So there's like authority in that process. We're both like sort of bowing to that and saying, I believe that truth can be found when we work together.
More truth.
Yeah, more than, right, exactly.
Right, so this is part of the humility of always being willing to come back and say, I think I know what I'm talking about, but I want to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
This humility that we've talked about before in other episodes that Augustine was so keen on. So this is, a lot of this is about honesty, right? That I hear all too often someone trying to have a conversation, but I think what they're really trying to do is have a monologue. And I can tell because they're abiding my words. And they're very polite and kind. They're not, you know, there's a lot of dangers in what we're talking about, and they're avoiding a lot of those dangers. They're at least appearing to listen, but I can tell they're not listening.
Yeah, they're more focused on the next thing they're saying, right?
If anything, what they're listening is for ways in which to bring it back to why they're right.
Yeah.
It's a contest.
Okay.
And conversation and can't have the ethos of a contest.
Right.
It's
bad teachers do that, right?
Right. And I think in some cases, this is one of the dangers. There is something very inviting about a conversation. It's very engaging. And so a student may honestly seek to enter in, and if he's got some gifts and the teacher's looking at it as, I was trying to show you how much I know, and the student brings up a question that challenges that. If it's a contest, the teacher often has the power to win.
Definitely.
To shut it down. And that's a hard thing. I have to work hard as a teacher that when I really, especially we'll draw the distinction here between a conversation and a seminar, it's just formality. But when I really want to have an honest conversation, discussion, dialogue, one of the things I almost immediately do is take a seat.
Good.
I
you do that in your classes and everything, right?
Right. So in my seminar, which I conduct daily, I'm seated. I'm part of their circle. I of course have to be very careful not to take over the conversation, because inevitably these great texts that we're working through, I'm just as excited to be in them, or in some cases more excited than they are. But I believe with my heart and soul that I am much more like them than above them. This is the minister and magister conversation we just had. That yes, I may be more familiar with this text than they are. I may be more read in whatever the idea is that the author is discussing, but I'm still much more of a neophyte. Much more like my students in knowledge than I am. I'm still much smaller than the idea is. That's probably the way I'm trying to say it.
Yeah. So let me, I know you want to, you have this thing where you talk about how school and conversation, like the interplay there, but let me share a story that I just remembered before you do that. You were talking about how you, when you want to have a conversation with your students, you just take a seat, right? And I think that's pretty powerful. It worked well for me. That was something that I did, not every single time, but a lot in my class. But I don't want everybody to start psychoanalyzing me or anything. But I do want to share this story because it's something that I remember and ponder from time to time. There was a situation where I was having a Latin class, and the students were great, but it was just not going well. It was like, so we're talking in Latin and we're doing something and they just weren't understanding. We were introducing a brand new declension or something like that. And it was tough. Okay. And we were just distracted. It's right before lunch. We're not having a good time. Just kind of getting through it. And lo and behold, at that exact moment, one of the professional development people decided to come in and do an impromptu, survey of me? Evaluation.
Yeah. Okay. Clipboard.
Yeah. Came in with, it was two of them. And I had never met them before. I just knew who they were. Okay. So they both come in with their clipboards and sit. And I didn't realize what I was doing at the time, but I continued for about 30 seconds. I got nervous. I was nervous, right? And I stood up. And I think that that's revelatory of how I felt in that moment, right? The class was not going well. Even though the students were great, it was just hard. And we were kind of looking not that smart together. And I stood up. And I think in that moment, I was like sort of trying to claim authority or like look like I knew what I was talking about.
All right, kids, we're going to rescue this lesson now. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Well, while you were describing that circumstance, I didn't know where you were going with it. I hadn't heard the story. I was thinking to myself, one of the most powerful things, conversations are difficult. You sometimes hit a wall. We've got this issue or this circumstance that's making it very difficult for us to move forward, especially when you have pretty diverse opinions around the conversation. There might be an issue of authority. There might be an issue of pretty basic, fundamental,
primitive terms.
Yeah, that it's even hard for you to identify why it's hard. And with students, just inexperience. Dare I say it, but illogic. You know, the fallacies start to flow. And the reason fallacies are bad in logic is because they destroy our ability to communicate honestly. And so I have sometimes stopped and had a conversation about our conversation. Guys, can we just back up for a moment and have a look? What's going on here? Why are we struggling?
What are we doing?
Yeah. And it's amazing to me how often they know what's going on. They know right when the wheels left the rail. They're not always sure how to right the train, but they know where it went bad.
Uh-huh.
Because their gut told them.
Yeah.
How's Mr. Elliott going to handle this? And I do think that there is a necessity in working with young people who are just learning the art of conversation to guide them and coach them and occasionally, tee it up, time out. Can you two kiss and make up, because young people will personalize the truth. And there's part of me says that's great, but part of me says they got to learn how to get back to Aristotle's point of
exactly
dealing with an idea without making it personal. Right. And of course, I think if our society figured that out. So you brought up the notion of school as a conversation, and I do think it is fundamentally and almost off the top of everybody's head. Teachers are having an ongoing conversation with students.
Right.
It's very difficult for substitutes because they're coming in for a day or maybe even a week. in the middle of a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that's been going on in class up to that point has been a progression of minds, teacher and students, to that point, and here comes this stranger. And that's why many teachers just default to busy work.
Yeah.
You know, because they know how tough it is for to get the stranger into the conversation.
Well, I mean, if a sub was able to come in and accomplish what the teacher who had been with the students every day for the past 4 months could do, then I would wonder how effective that teacher was, you know?
Right.
Like, wait a minute.
Right.
We can just replace you like with, you know, a few hours notice and a lesson plan written out and we're running at 100%. Wow.
Right. 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 So the student and teacher are having a conversation that is a year, or I think it's wonderful when it's more than a year in length.
Definitely.
But that, as fundamental as that seems to school, I don't think that's the conversation. I think there are others just as important going on. You and I have talked about the fact that the great schools, I think, are better known for the conversation going on amongst the faculty.
Yes.
Because in a good school, when you've got faculty that have been there for a while and are each gifted in their own way to teach and mm-hmm. and honest and brave enough to talk to each other about this art of teaching, you know, then you start to have a school of artists, all of whom are critical of each other's work and critical of their own work in the good way, not critical yeah. as in I hate you, but wow, you do it that way and you have such good success. If I tried to do that, it wouldn't work for me. And you talk back and forth, and I'm not talking about the duck pond, which is inevitable in a school, and you get teachers having a bad day, and they just want to gripe to somebody about little Eddie.
Right.
You know, little Eddie should be tied up and put in a closet somewhere. I'm not talking about that. That's the psychological necessity of people bearing one another's burdens. But I am talking yeah. about the notion of apprenticeship, the notion that the wiser teachers are leading the younger teachers along. Student and teacher, yes. Teacher and teacher, absolutely. I think that the families that constitute the school are having a constant conversation with the school, probably mostly through the administration and faculty. But the school is saying this is how things ought to be done, and families should be asking questions. Well, why do you do it that way and not this way? You know, mm-hmm. we really want this for our child. How is your school going to meet that? So on and so forth. So there should be more than just complaints about Johnny's grade. There should be, seeking to understand.
Well, conversation,
right?
Not
well, and not proselytizing. You know, on the part of the school. Look, this is just the way we right. do things.
Persuade.
You know, and the yeah. coolest thing to me is lunch. Because that's where student Definitely. To student, I love the fact that at least at the present moment, my seminar class, which is a formal conversation, occurs fourth hour right before lunch. So if it's going well and the kids get their brains going, 45 minutes is not enough time to have a good conversation. And inevitably, it rolls mm-hmm. it rolls through the lunch line, right? They're standing there. Talking about Play-Doh while they wait for their pizza, which is appropriate, it seems to me, and right. goes right to the table, and they're all there. And often what I love is the fact that the last 5 minutes they realize, oh we got to eat because right. the conversation has yeah. consumed right. them appropriately. And yeah. I one last way I would mention the conversation, I'm taking way too long with this, but
that's okay.
The community of the school, the statement of the school, the opinion, if I will, of the school is out there in the marketplace of the culture and the community.
Okay. So it's kind of school to community.
School to community or school to culture. There's a okay. sense in which, especially if you're countercultural, as I think many good schools almost have to be today.
Okay.
You're saying, well, we do it this way.
Okay, let's throw them all out on the table one more time. A school is a conversation, student to teacher. That's a conversation. Teacher and teacher. Okay, faculty conversations. Parents to school or families to school.
Yep.
Student to student.
Yep.
Okay, peer-to-peer conversation. And then school to community or school to culture. Okay, I want to say this before we shut it down. I think that those are true equally. Well, maybe if you twist my arm a little bit, you could. But equally true, whether you're talking about an elementary boys school or a 30,000 student university or a K through 12 public school or whatever it is, it seems to me like a school is most a school when all of those conversations are vibrant.
And let's not forget those trying to homeschool. They're not set oh, yeah, free. They're just given the difficulty of intimacy. It's really hard for a parent to have a conversation with their child because we are daily about the process of proselytizing, right? We're trying. No, kid, you believe this. And I'm not backing off of the fact that I should be instructing my children in righteousness. I would say that as they grow up, there's got to be experiences where they've found the difference between mom's sermon on why I should be well-mannered at the table and and a conversation about why the table can be such a powerful avenue of conversation, right? You go to the scriptures, you find people eating and having these conversations all over the place. There's something to that. And one is a sifting of ideas between two people. One happens to be mom and one happens to be son. And the other is, I as an authority am telling you that this is the way things are in this house. And so they're forced into both kinds of relationship.
Yeah. As a former teacher too, who like is no longer in a school, but now has a child that I'm educating, the faculty relationships that I formed were wonderfully enriching to me and rejuvenating. And, you know, I have my wife that I can talk to about this kind of stuff, and it's great, but it's not the same as someone who's doing it all the time, you know? And so, yeah, the homeschooler for sure has some.
Well, and that's why you see the umbrellas, right? Where the moms who are doing most of the instruction are getting together and having coffee and having conversation because they share they share something in common. Homeschooling.
Yeah.
How do you do it? Right. What works? Exactly. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, we chewed up it all the time, but we've got plenty to talk about. We got plenty to cover. And plenty of time, just another episode to come.
Well, thanks again for joining us in this great conversation about education. We hope you will not just listen, but participate. Leave us a comment, suggestion, or thought on our website. You just never know when we'll use it on the show. Until next time, pursue joy and learn something.